host Eddie Lindenstein, and long anticipated for me, but I'm here on the line with Dan Buglio. Dan, are you there?
I am.
So Dan, very, very well known in the TMS DPS community. I've been talking to Dan for close to 2 years at this point. I mean, at least a year and a half. But Dan's been working on a lot of regular video content that is getting out there to the masses a little bit more in terms of different tips and things like that around TMS. So we're going to spend the next, let's just call it somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour, talking about all things Dan Buglio and kind of what it is that you bring to the table and what makes your story unique and everything under the sun when it comes to this stuff. Does that sound fair to you?
That sounds great to me, Eddie.
Awesome.
And it is a pleasure to get on the phone with you here and kind of ramble about some of this stuff. So this is going to be fun for me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, by the time that this one airs, I think it'll be episode 70, which is pretty wild.
Nice.
Pretty wild that it began. I was just telling somebody the other day that this started just very much as the original name of it was the Eddie Knows Fitness Podcast. And the first guest that I had on was a CrossFit, you know, a big CrossFit athlete. And we were talking and we're talking, and she starts talking about, not exactly TMS, but she was alluding to emotional repression causing physical strain as an athlete. And I kind of like, this was after I had found Sarno's book and I kind of had this awakening in it. I was like, what did I find more interesting in that conversation? Was it, you know, how many snatches and clean and jerks can you do in 10 minutes? Or was it, what's been the impact on you as an athlete as a, you know,
sure,
by having these things? And then I remember the next one I did was with an ex-Marine, and he started talking about PTSD and headaches and migraines. And I was like, this is way more the stuff that I find fascinating than the fitness stuff.
I've been fascinated with this stuff since 22 years ago, whenever I first got hit with it. So I know what you're talking about. It's very easy to dive into this and keep on learning more, and I can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
Every single thing I look at, every video on YouTube, everything else, I'm going, that applies to pain.
Yep.
Make some notes. Holy cow, here's a new analogy I can share. And that's where my head's been for a long time.
Awesome. That's actually a perfect segue. I mean, you said 22 years ago. Some people know your story, some people do not. Maybe get us up to speed. When did you start having some health issues, and when did it get so bad that you couldn't ignore it? And, you know, tell us how you found Sarno, and then tell us ultimately why Sarno wasn't the end result, the end gate for you.
All right. So I've been trying to dissect this because I know exactly where the pain first struck me. It was like one of those jab in the back muscle spasms, dropped me to my knees. And I think it was about when I was about 31, because I think my son was 2 or 3. I wish I had exact dates, but I don't even have that. But literally bending over to put on my underwear and just drop me to my knees, go to the doctor, here's some muscle relaxers. 3 days later, it's not better. Call the doctor. Oh, go to the chiropractor here. Go to the chiropractor. He tries adjusting me while I'm in complete spasm. Could barely get out of the car, you know, and this guy's trying to twist me around. Excruciating. And so that kind of started probably a 13-year journey. And even that, I've said 11 years in one of my videos, but heck, that was 2 years ago when I shot the video. So I don't know. I'm still trying to dissect exactly when it started, exactly when I beat it. All I know is that I've been feeling great for 8-9 years now, maybe about 8 years. But I suffered for anywhere between 11 to 13 years. And when I figure out the dates, I'll share them publicly. But, it was the type of thing. I wasn't writing it down because who wants to keep track of that stuff, right?
Right, so, right. Yeah, I'm almost trying to unlearn how good I am at dates, to be honest.
Yes. So you asked about when did I discover Sarno. So I had a first year where, you know, that first episode probably lasted a couple of months before it really kind of settled down a little bit. And I had no clue about Sarno at that point. I was just doing the doctor routine and the, you know, the muscle relaxants and the chiropractor, and let's go get an x-ray, and oh, there's some disc degeneration, little signs of osteoarthritis. And I'm in my early 30s at the time, and I'm going, wow, this could be bad. You know, but they were like, a lot of people have that. It's not awful. I was like, okay, great. Then why am I, you know, bowled over in pain? And so you know, driving back and forth to work, you know, 40-minute commute, driving up and down the highway. I used to listen to Howard Stern a lot. And if you know Howard's story, Howard was cured by Dr. Sarno. I don't know when, but a long time ago, back when Howard was still on the radio, Howard used to lay on the floor in his studio and do his radio show with a mic dangling on his face while he was laying down. Not all the time, but sometimes when his back pain was that bad. So he was the guy who told me about Sarno, and I said, well, who the heck is this guy? Certainly bought some books and been a Sarno disciple or follower, or basically I believed early on that, holy crap, this is what's going on. This makes so much sense for me. I can see myself on all the pages, and you've heard dozens of people say that already. So I had some success, and then the pain would come back. And it would take me a little longer to have some success with the Sarno methods. You know, talk to your brain, think psychologically, reject the physical diagnosis, all that stuff. I had it all like memorized. I wrote out the 12 daily reminders, did it all the time. But it would frustrate the crap out of me, because here I would be absolutely certain that this was going on, but yet the pain kept coming back, coming back, coming back, coming back. And, you know, then after a while, it got so much that it became pretty constant. And I'd walk with practically a limp because the pain had me so twisted and so much pain. Working at the office, going into the office, shut the door. First thing I got to do when I get into the office is lay on the floor and let my back decompress.
You know, the twisted thing, this was, I told you when we hopped on off the air, I had four pre-planned questions basically. And one of them was, your body was all twisted and contorted in this before and after picture that I saw. What did doctors tell you? Is because to me, like, I've seen images like that are similar, where people are all contorted, and, you know, sometimes, like, one of the specialists I went and saw in my, you know, 2-year bout of running doctor to doctor was like a Rolfer, and a lot of Rolfers on their website have pictures very similar to that. Somebody's all twisted up and contorted.
Yep.
So what did they tell you was the reason for that?
Well, that happened late in the game. It was like after, I don't know, 10 years worth of pain, that's how I ended up. And literally, I was in the kitchen with my wife, and she looks at me and goes, you're crooked. I laughed. I said, what are you talking about? You're literally crooked. And up until that point, I knew I was twisted up a little bit, but I didn't realize how much. And that's when I took those pictures. I had her take some pictures. And that's when I realized how whacked out I really was. I had my general practitioner, he didn't know what the hell to do with it. I didn't even go see him at that point. But I did see a physical therapist, because at that time I was still maybe a 2 or 3 on the scale of 1 to 10 in pain. And that was fairly tolerable for me given the amount of time I had been in pain. So I was functional, but it was still a royal pain. So I went to a physical therapy firm and said, look, my pain's not really bad, but look at me, I'm all jacked up. I just want to fix these, because I knew there were muscle imbalances. There's a company that has a program out there that's all about muscle imbalances. And I literally looked at the picture in the workbook that they sent out, and I was like, that's what my body looks like. So muscle imbalances, it makes sense. These muscles on the right are too tight. These muscles on the left are too loose. And so we got to stretch the tight ones and tighten up the loose ones, and let's get our body back in line. So I followed that process for a while, the physical therapist, 6 weeks of doing that. And over the period of 6 weeks, going 3 times a week for an hour each time, not only was it excruciating because I had muscles in spasm and I had quote unquote professionals telling me, wow, we've never seen it. And they look at you crooked. You know how the dog crocks its head to the side when it's confused?
Yep.
Literally had like the owner of this PT company looking at me crooked going, wow, I've never seen anybody this pulled out of whack. And, you know, of course, what they do is they give me the standard photocopied set of exercises. And I said, well, these are what you give to everybody who's got back pain. What about me? Because I'm much different. When am I going to stretch these and loosen that? And right. It wasn't tailored to me. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. You know, and I wasn't really getting anywhere. But after 6 weeks of having this authority organization, this figure of physical therapist trained in the body, looking at me as I was so screwed up, my pain from the beginning when I first went to them just to say, hey, I want to straighten out my body. I'm not worried about it, but just straighten it up. It was two or three. By the time I got done with 6 weeks, I was a chronic eight all the time.
Wow.
Because I had this programming that I was all jacked up. And it literally convinced me that I was totally screwed up. And I started turning the corner when I fired them. And one of the main reasons I fired them was because I was working with one guy in particular. And I said, hey, what do you think about this Dr. Sarno guy? Oh, well, I've heard of him, whatever. And I said, all right, let me bring it in. I brought in Healing Back Pain on CD. I said, here, check it out. I'd love to know what you think. 3 weeks later, the dude never even cracked the CD. It was still sitting on the front desk. And at that point, I was like, they don't even care. They're just doing what the textbook tells them to do. So I said, I got to get out of here. I fired him. And that's when I kind of turned the corner. I said, I'm done with this physical treatment stuff. I had done chiropractic. I'd done the physical therapy. Fortunately, I found Sarno before I started going down any other major things like injections or any other major things, but mostly chiropractic and physical therapy and stretching and all sorts of stuff that never worked.
Did you get the, because you were talking about, you know, too tight on one side, too loose on another. Did you have the flex? You know, some people talk about it moving from side to side. Was there instances where your whole right side would be really tight and then it would flip and go to the left side, or was it pretty consistent? Or
as far as these muscle imbalances that I developed, it was always kind of tilted in one direction, but the pain would move.
Gotcha.
Right? Yep. The pain would definitely move from one side to another. Sometimes I'd have the sciatica down the leg. Sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes it would be really bad. Sometimes it wouldn't. But as far as being twisted, one of the things that really helped me out was, and I was on a quest. I sent a letter to Dr. Schubner, an email. And he was kind enough to get back to me. I sent him an email with the pictures. And his response to me was simple. He goes, you're crooked because you're in pain. You're not in pain because you're crooked. And that was key for me. I mean, it was like, okay, ding, 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 that makes sense. And literally, I remember myself sitting in my chair at the office or working or whatever, and I would lean over to the left. Why? Because it felt better that way. I was more comfortable.
Yep.
And so, of course, if you sit with your hips completely angled, like your torso off to the left, you're going to develop muscle imbalances. And years of doing that is exactly what happened. And that's how I got crooked. And if I look in the mirror closely, I'm still a little bit crooked. My right shoulder is a little bit lower than my left. My neck is still a little bit tilted to the right, which indicates that my spine is a little bit going up towards the right at the top. But the bottom line is, I don't hurt. So it wasn't the shape of my body that was causing any of the problems. The shape of my body was as a result of the pain, not the cause of it. And that's key for people to learn.
And I would assume that not only no pain, but no loss in function, meaning like you can do whatever it is that you want.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that was big for me. But it took a long time.
So let's talk about that. Like you had knowledge of the Sarno stuff for over a decade, and you know, you would sort of take three steps forward and a couple steps back, and you know, the thing just wouldn't go away. And then something changed. Like, what was the click for you, and why? What did you change in terms of your methodology?
So a lot of the time that I was following the Sarno methods was hit or miss. I would, you know, I would kind of do some of this work. I would try to talk to my brain, but I didn't really have a daily committed practice that I did every morning at 8 o'clock. It was kind of hit or miss. Yeah, I'll do this for a while. It didn't work. And then just kind of get on with your life and hope it goes away. And then, so it was never really a committed daily practice. And I think that's one of the critical things that anybody who is trying to eliminate pain or other symptoms is going to benefit completely by a daily practice. If you don't do that, you're just kind of, it's like learning a sport and saying, well, I want to be a professional basketball player. I'll practice on Mondays.
Yeah.
It's just never going to work. Right. It's got to be a daily consistent thing where you develop, you know, these mindsets and these beliefs and these habits of thought. So what happened for me was, you know, I got into journaling for a long time. That didn't work. number one, it didn't work because it didn't end my pain. Number two, it didn't work because after 6 months of writing down the worst, most awful things that had ever happened to me in my life over and over and over again, I literally wrote myself into a depression because all I was doing was focusing on the negative aspects of my life. Zero gratitude, zero thankfulness, zero trying to find joy. It was all like, well, I'm supposed to write about the negative stuff. So I did. And at the end of 6 months, I had to throw that journal away and say, I can't do this anymore. Right. And I still didn't have the answer. And I excavated my childhood. I mean, I talk about that in the videos. You know, my childhood wasn't as traumatic as some people's. And so I didn't find any gold there hiding as I went backwards. And what I realized for me is one of the things that I really realized is it's so easy to get mad at the outside world, but it's a lot harder to look in the mirror and realize the person I was most angry with was myself. Unfulfilled potential, not accomplishing the things I had wanted to accomplish, right? And I think that's a big struggle that many people come across with. And, you know, how many times have you looked in the mirror and said, holy crap, how did I get here?
Yep.
Right? Yep. Like, this isn't what I signed up for. And so as I, you know, now as I'm, you know, older and wiser, and I know a lot more about this, I look back at when the pain started. I was 31, 32, married in a marriage that was okay, but showed some signs of trouble. Had a 2-year-old, money was really tight, lived in a little rental, didn't own a house, had a job that was okay, but really stressful, a commute that was really shitty. So, like, you know, a perfect storm of a bunch of stress and pressure. And at the same time, my personality type was, I'm the nice, easygoing guy that nothing ever bothers. Right? That's who I was when I grew up. My mom told me since I was 5, oh, you were always the happy kid. You never cried. Nothing ever bothers you. Right? And so what do you think I did with anger? Locked it up.
Pushed it down, yeah.
Repressed it. What do you think I did with rage? Unacceptable, because then I'd be just like my angry father. There's no way in hell I'm going to be like my dad. Right? So, you know, I repressed all the negative stuff. I was in a ball of stress. And honestly, this is an interesting story because this first episode of pain happened the morning when I was going to go to work and there was a corporate golf outing. And this would have been my first time playing a round of golf with my buddies because I was just learning how to play. And there was this feeling of, oh man, this is going to be awful. I'm never going to hear the end of it. And I really connected the dots just a few weeks ago when I said, holy crap, why was that so significant that my body or my brain said, we got to protect him from this. Let's give him some back pain. Why it's so significant is when I was in Little League, I don't even know how old I was, I went a whole entire season with a 0 batting average. I didn't get a single hit. And I, you know, I got made fun of for that for years, right? I mean, it was horrible. So here I am thinking, you know, I'm in my 30s going to play golf with my buddies and going, oh, this is going to be brutal. I didn't connect the dots.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking back at it, it's like, oh, that must have just brought up that whole, you're going to be awful at sports and you're going to be made fun of for a long time. And that combined with the other ball of stress and reality and life and being an adult, which is infuriating enough, having kids, which is infuriating, and being, you know, just being responsible, it's infuriating. I think it was just that perfect storm that said, bam. And then what I truly believe is that once you have an episode like that, if you can truly go, whatever, the body heals, not really give a crap, most likely that episode will be fairly short-lived until the next time, right? But through fear, focus, and anxiety, we literally lock these pain symptoms in. We literally, through our fear, focus, and anxiety and thinking about it and focusing on it, we literally program our brain to keep those pain signals going. And Dr. Schubner talks about that in Unlearn Your Pain. He says we can teach our brain to keep pain signals firing long after any normal injury would heal, assuming there was an injury in the first place, which there wasn't.
You know, it's I'm glad that you brought that up, that because you told that last the phrase, the sorry, repeat it one more time. The something, and the anxiety. What was the what are the three things?
Fear, focus, and anxiety.
So you said that in your video this morning, and I was out on my morning walk, and I was listening to it, and I was thinking about when this stuff happened for me, and it was like I went through, I had my shoulder, my reconstructive shoulder surgery done. Who knows if I needed that or not, but I had it done. And like, you know, the thing was, like, I went and worked with my post-surgical physical therapist two or three times a week, for 4.5-5 months. And, I would see him, we'd work together, but you have to be so like body vigilant during that, because it's how is the repair feeling? How is your body feeling? How are you recovering from things? So every little tiny thing, when I was at the gym, if something felt different, like, suddenly, like, it was not catastrophizing, but it was definitely thinking, it was always in my, not even in the rearview mirror, like, it was like dead in front of me. And so when I was just a day away from being cleared for all medical activity, or sorry, all physical activity, and I jumped up on the pull-up bar and I'm doing pull-ups, which I had done hundreds of times before. This was my first test after my shoulder surgery, and I jumped off the bar when I was done, and my entire back, like, from like the base of my neck all the way to like the middle of my back, maybe a little bit lower than that, just completely locked up. And, you know, if somebody that is hypervigilant on any sort of symptom, because they just went through this traumatic surgery and this several months of rehab and a lot of expense and a lot of strain on the family, I'm just almost like waiting for that next injury to happen. And so it totally resonated with me when you said that. And, you know, the people that are in my life that I know that seem to have health issue after health issue, that I can, like, you know, we can armchair quarterback and we can say this person probably has this stuff going on. They probably don't want to hear it, but they're also hypervigilant about every little thing that comes up. I think it's a perfect way of putting it, the way that you did.
Yeah, that's absolutely, in my mind, you know, how pain, a one-time thing, can become chronic, is because we literally, all we do is think about it. And I've really been geeking out on the concept of neuroplasticity lately. You know, Schubner talks about it as neural pathways, but there's a lot of real good experts in the world about neuroplasticity, which is what we fire most often in our brain, wires. So through that focus on the pain, and combine that with the emotion of anxiety and fear, we literally are teaching our brain to get really efficient at firing pain signals. And our brain's only job is to give us what it thinks we want. And if all we're doing all day long is thinking pain, 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 it's going to say, all right, let's get good at that. Let's get efficient. No different than an athlete getting efficient at a physical move, like a golfer in a golf swing. That's muscle memory. You know, clearly the brain learns, well, this guy's going to go out there and swing this stupid looking club over and over again. We better get good at it. And it starts to wire those golf muscles or golf neurons in the brain. Well, if all you're doing all day long is focusing on your pain and trying to fix it and catastrophizing about it and watching movies in your head about how horrible your life's going to be if it doesn't go away, you know, measuring and monitoring and using these authoritative medical terms, right? You know, calling it by the medical textbook terms and talking about our pain constantly with everybody around us. You know, what do you think our brain is going to do? Our brain's going to say, okay, let's get really efficient at this. So really where I believe we got to take a step out and say is that's not working for us. It's not helping us. So we need to stop all of these common mistakes people make when they start encountering pain or have pain for a long period of time. We got to start unwinding that. And it's not like you can say stop thinking negatively, right? You hear people say that all the time, stop thinking negatively. That's not a very constructive solution because the brain can't stop doing anything. It doesn't stop. The brain is constantly moving. So what I suggest people do is replace your negative thinking, right? Big difference. Stop is impossible. Replace with something that actually will wire circuitry in your brain to give you what you want instead of what you've been fearing and focusing on and being freaked out about. So neuroplasticity is, I think, a piece here that is fascinating to me. I think it definitely holds a piece in this discussion for me moving forward. And, when you think about it that way, that's just how the brain works. We can either choose to work with it or fight against it. So I'm choosing to work with it.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily related to the neuroplasticity part, but the thing about using medical terms, the example you gave in a video once was saying the term I have plantar fasciitis versus I have some foot pain. And, you know, for me, it was thoracic outlet syndrome or brachial plexus compression was one that I was getting told a lot. And
That sounds really scary, though.
Right, right. Like, but like before I even heard of the term brachial plexus, it sounded like a supercomputer to me. Like that's what it said, like something from the Matrix. It's just how it sounds to me. But I was thinking about there, and I want to dive a little bit deeper into internal organic things, not cancer, but other internal things that people can have go wrong a little bit later. But there was a discussion of gallbladder issues on one of the TMS Facebook groups last night, and that I was sort of sitting there interested in, and I was actually just talking to Barb Marquardt, who's a supporter of the show, and I'm sure you know who she is, but I was telling her that like a couple of years ago, I remember seeing a diagram of like where it is that you have pain and could be connected to the gallbladder. And you know, if you have this issue, it's because you have this other thing. But then I kind of backed up and I was thinking like, okay, so let's say that a couple of years ago, I would have went down that route and I would have said, okay, I have this neck pain. It's connected to my gallbladder. Oh, that's what happened. That's the Holy Grail. And that's the basis of it is my gallbladder has an issue. But if I took a step back and I sort of think about it retrospectively, I'm like, well, if we say that this is a symptom and it's more of a systemic thing, which that's what TMS is ultimately a systemic type of a thing, by just saying, hey, I have an issue with my gallbladder, I have gallbladder disease, I think that maybe the why behind it or how behind it is something that a lot of people overlook and miss. And I'll give you a good example. There was a guy, this is part of the gallbladder conversation, but there was somebody who asked on the group yesterday, they said, I'm going to go rule out the physical, which I want your opinion on in a couple of minutes, but I'm going to go rule out the physical. And I had inquired, okay, so like, what does that mean? And this person said they were going to go and get their gallbladder looked at. And they ended up coming back and saying that they have some gallbladder issues, but they're going to do a cleanse and that should solve the problem. So I go to the TMS wiki, I type in gallbladder. I found this guy who was talking about how he was going to have gallbladder surgery. And I just went to all the postings that he had made, which there wasn't a ton of them. It was 7 or 8. And these are way back in 2012. And you can see this, the beginning of that year, he was posting on about how bad his back pain was. And he had read Sarno's books and read Schubiner's books and things like that. And then he comes back a couple months later and says, hey, I figured out what my problem is. I need my gallbladder removed and I'm so relieved and I don't have TMS and all this kind of stuff. And a couple months later, he goes on a hiatus, comes back a couple months later, talks about how he's taking a ton of Percocet, a lot of painkillers, all this kind of stuff because of his bad back pain. I emailed the guy last night and just, you know, I'm like, he hasn't been on this thing in 7 years. So the odds of him, the odds of his email address still working, who knows? He responded right away and he told me he ended up having his gallbladder removed, didn't fix the problem at all, didn't change anything, and his spinal pain is worse today than it was ever. And I was thinking, like, God, how sad is that? Because the problem, like, I completely understand going to a doctor and getting checked out and things like that and quote unquote ruling out physical. However, I have tons of imaging that says that I have these massive problems that I was diagnosed with that I chased around, right? So things that on an EMG and an MRI should be these big pathological problems. And yet I had symptomatology that was moving around and I had waxing and waning. And there were certain times where it was, you know, not as bad or things like that. So, you know, what's your advice on the rule out the physical part? Because especially people, you worked on this stuff for 11 years before you really found some finality behind it. And there's a lot of people listening to this right now that probably have had some relief and have had partial relief and majority of relief, but maybe not 100% relief.
Right.
And I know that something's spinning in the back of their head that I saw 30 doctors, one of them missed something, so I need to go back and investigate this. Where do you draw the line on the ruling out the physical?
Well, I think the term rule out the physical is a trap because if you say to somebody, I've got some back pain, I heard about Sarno, I'm checking this out. The first thing that comes up in these TMS groups is, have you ruled out the physical? And they're like, well, I guess I need to. And then they go to the doctor and what does the doctor find? Duh, 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 something physical. Of course.
Yep.
Right. And now they're like, okay, well, I do have something physical. So now I'm really screwed. Right. And so that's a trap, not a purposeful trap, but it's something that's very easy to get stuck in. I like to say rule out the life-threatening. Rule out the fractures or breaks. You know what I mean? Like, if you fell down out of a tree, rule out fractures. You know what I mean? Because if you have a broken ankle and you walk on it for 6 months without getting it set properly, it may still be hurting you in 6 months, right? Because you never allowed it to heal because you kept on walking on it. Whereas cancer, same thing. You know, if there's something going on, have the doctor rule these things out. Do some blood tests. What are your white blood cells look like? Are there any markers that are showing signs of concern? If not, and there's no concern for cancer and there's nothing broken, most of the other findings in the imaging studies, the x-rays, the MRIs, and all of these other disc degeneration and bulging and herniated discs and all that stuff, you can basically take with a grain of salt.
Have you ever heard of the book Overdiagnosed?
I've heard of it. I've not bought it and read it.
My the therapist I was seeing a couple of years ago, who just by, you know, I'd read Sarno's book, and then like the next thing I did was search through my insurance to see what therapists in my area were, because I just, you know, I thought this is probably a good idea just to have somebody to talk to. And thankfully he wasn't a TMS psychologist. He was close to retirement, but he knew all about Sarno, loved his books, loved his work, completely bought into it, understood it. And so, but at the end, you know, at the end of the day, it was just nice to have a guy who's 70 years old, who rides a motorcycle like I do, that I can just talk to. You know what I mean?
Right.
That was extremely refreshing. And he told me about this book, Overdiagnosed, and I went and I checked it out at the library. And I mean, the entire book is basically laced with cancers and other different types of diagnoses that people will get, where over the last, let's just call it 50 years, where imaging has gotten astronomically better. The diagnosing of disorders has become astronomically higher, yet the treatment and cure rate and ultimately the mortality rate hasn't changed at all. Even though the diagnostics are, you know, they might diagnose 300 times more now than they did 30 years ago for certain things, but yet the rate that it's killing people, or the rate to which people are actually being cured of whatever ailment it is that they have, has not changed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, treating the image and treating the, like what it is that the tests say, can really be a trap for a lot of people. And to the people listening to this that think that I sound insensitive when I say that, I totally get it. However, there is a certain amount of time, like maybe this sounds shitty for me to say, but I think about it anytime that, you know, maybe my neck starts bothering me, or maybe my mid back starts bothering me, for a day or a couple days, or, you know, whatever the case is. And if I start going back to that place where I think, okay, like maybe there is something a little bit more serious, part of me also thinks if I've had cancer for 2.5 years, I mean, I feel like I'd be in much worse. I wouldn't physically be able to go to the gym and clean and jerk 270 pounds. Like, sure, if I had a major problem now, you know what I mean? But I think that TMS inherently makes people even more hypervigilant about their health than they would have been before.
So I have 2 points I want to jump in with when it comes to imaging. And chronic pain, I truly believe that imaging makes people worse, because now they're seeing a normal abnormality and the doctor, with all the authority that they can muster, is saying, that's why you're in pain and you're probably going to need surgery at some point. You're probably going to need spinal fusion. And if you don't get that, you're going to be in pain for the rest of your life. How much has that imaging study helped this person?
It's quite the opposite.
Right? They just got a life sentence to pain and disability. And when in fact that imaging study may have been showing a normal abnormality that 2/3 of the population have, whether they've got pain or not, right? It's not a big deal. We age. That's what it's called. Like, so that's one of the aspects there. And literally just this morning in my, you know, mistakes people make, you know, my number 10 in the document is mistake believing the doctors. Number 2, not believing the doctors.
Yep.
What the heck do I mean by that? Well, not believing the doctors, when you go there, and there's a good percentage of people with chronic pain that they look at their MRIs and everything, and there's nothing there, right? Or gastrointestinal problems. My sister's had stomach problems for 15 years, and they've scoped her down the top and up the bottom, and they don't see anything wrong. So when the doctors say there's nothing wrong, we don't see anything that should be causing the problems, the first mistake people make is they don't believe the doctor. They must have missed something, right?
Yep.
And on the other side of the equation, if the doctor says, yep, you've got a herniated disc right there at C4, whatever it is, that's why you're in pain and you're pretty well screwed unless you get surgery. The other mistake is believing the doctor when they say something like that. Right. Yeah. So you can eat. And unfortunately, it's up to us as the patient or the individual to say, OK, I've gone through the assessment. My pain moves. It changes in severity. Sometimes it's there, sometimes never at all. It's got all the characteristics and my personality types fit in with this TMS or distraction pain process. So I believe I have TMS. So I'm going to choose to not put a lot of weight on these images because they're just showing normal abnormalities. That's up to us. A doctor is never going to do that for us unless you're fortunate to see a doctor, a physician who's actually trained in TMS and mind-body disorders.
Are there certain parts of the world, I mean, you've been doing this work a long time, I mean, comparatively speaking, are there certain parts of the world that you're aware of that are more advanced in this stuff, where it doesn't sound so crazy as it might in parts of the United States? Because every time when I talk to somebody in Australia or New Zealand or the United Kingdom or some of these other places, and my assumption is that they are much more advanced there medically than they are here, their answer is no, it's not even close. They never have... There's no, right. Like, there is no credence to that type of a concept. But sometimes I also, like, because I'm looking for it, but I can jump on the Google machine and I can type in, you know, liver pain and emotions. And it almost always seems to trace back to, like, Eastern medicine and Chinese medicine that's been around for thousands of years, where they're talking about a connection, but yet it's missed here. So is there any part of the world that you're aware of that maybe is more versed or more, you know, TMS savvy per se?
I don't believe so. I think it's hit or miss, just like it is here in the United States. There's a certain subset of the population that is open-minded to this concept and willing to embrace it. And there is a big portion of the population that just absolutely rejects it because you're telling me I'm crazy. And that's absolutely not the case. The pain is as real as anything you could ever imagine. I spent 14 hours on the floor once, hardwood floor, couldn't get up, couldn't move, right? So I know the pain is real. It's about as bad as anything, but I don't know. I think there's a certain amount of the population that doesn't want to do the work when they start realizing. And my mother's a prime example. I mentioned it in a video. She's had TMS type of symptoms for, I don't know, 20, 25, 30 years. You know, almost like fibromyalgia-like, but she won't let herself get diagnosed with that because she knows that's a rabbit hole she doesn't want to go down. But she basically, I've told her about this. She's seen what it's done for me. She's seen my life completely turned around from being limited mobility-wise to completely unlimited. And I said, Ma, all you got to do is this. And she said, she looked me square in the eye and said, I'd rather feel the physical pain than go back and open up those emotional wounds. Literally. Because this is challenging, this is difficult. I don't like to use the term work because that makes it bigger and harder than it should be. The keys for me is stop freaking out about your pain. It's going to be all right. There's nothing wrong with you. And if you can go back to the fundamentals of TMS theory and this distraction divergent process, your body's actually okay. Your brain is just malfunctioning with this protection mechanism to keep you safe from emotions it believes are dangerous. So let's go back to foundation, square one. Well, if the brain feels these emotions are dangerous, what's the first thing we want to do? We want to convince the subconscious that emotions are not dangerous. How do we do that? We got to feel them. But if you take away all of the surrounding fear and focus and anxiety and freak out and all of this measuring and monitoring and I got to get rid of it and making your entire life about getting rid of the pain. I have worked with people that literally from the minute they wake up till the minute they go to bed, all they're thinking about is how can I get rid of this pain? And when you look at how the brain works, all they're doing is wiring the brain to keep on sending those pain signals.
And so it's exhausting. That makes me think of, there was a period of time where literally I'd be Googling as I'm going to bed, you know, symptoms. And as I'm falling asleep, I'd set the phone on the charger. I would wake up, I would open Safari again on my iPhone and I would just continue when I woke up. And that's all that it was, You know.
Right, but that's extremely easy to do. It's a human condition. And, you know, a doctor says there's nothing wrong. Okay, they must have missed something because this certainly feels like something's wrong.
Yep.
Right? And so, you know, Sarno talked about belief. We, you know, this is a sales job to the subconscious. We got to convince the subconscious that our body is okay and our emotions are safe. And we do that by feeling the emotions and stop freaking out about the body. But it's really tough to convince the subconscious of that when the conscious mind is still freaking out.
Well, let's segue that then. So this is another one of my pre-planned questions, and you dove right into it, is the feeling part. I bought Zero Pain Now. Maybe mm-hmm. it was the third book that I had bought on the topic. So this would have been like the summer of 17, late summer 17. And the whole directive, particularly in the workbook, is feel your emotions. And it asks that repetitive question right now, what emotion Correct. Am I feeling? And then, but to me, yep. now looking back, I know that it wasn't really feeling, it was thinking. And it was just sort of saying this. But there was something that I had come across at one point in time where Adam Heller is on. He's on a webinar and he's describing to people to like an actual, like something that really aids people in being able to feel them. Can you touch on that a little bit? And I'm curious if that approach was ultimately what really helped you turn a corner as well.
I believe it was, because what that got me out of was the whole story mode. And I say, stay out of story mode. Stories don't help us. Story mode is I'm angry because Tom did this, Susan did that, this guy did that, my boss really pissed me off, story, 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 right? What are we doing by telling these stories over and over again or thinking them over and over again? We're literally reenacting these situations in our brain.
Yep.
And our brain cannot tell the difference between a real event happening right now in 3D and an imagined event. So our body will react and fire the stress hormones and the fight or flight response every single time we reenact that story in our head, right? So that's why that journaling didn't work for me, because all I was doing was reenacting stories. Every reason I was angry with my life, my wife, my kid, my job, my commute, everything else, I was just constantly refiring all of those emotions and staying stuck in them. And I literally worked myself into a depression. So when it comes to feeling emotions, yes, Zero Pain Now is one of my turning points. Why? Because it got me out of story mode. The elegance in that process, when I first got it, the first time I looked at the book, the first time I looked at the workbook, I said to myself, I paid money for what? One question, right? And you may have done the same thing. A lot of people do. And then they go, you know, I asked and answered this question 25 times. Nothing happened. You know what? It's not a matter of doing it once or 25 times. It could be 2,500 times. It could be however many. And I truly believe that you said, I'm thinking it. I don't believe that's a case, because it's you're issuing a command to your subconscious. Right now, what emotion am I feeling? Okay, take a breath. Yeah, I'm feeling anger. Yep, there it is. It's in my neck. It's tightened up. I'm feeling anger. No story. It's I'm feeling anger, period. No story. Okay, now let me ask again. Now what am I feeling? I'm feeling sad. Okay. And you do it over and over again. And what you're doing is you're basically telling the subconscious, all right, it's okay. Let's get the obvious stuff out of the way. Yeah, you're consciously pissed off. You're consciously sad. You're consciously in a rage about this, this, and that. Those are the things you're aware of already. But if you keep on asking an answer, the subconscious is going to go, well, you're still okay, so maybe I'll give you a little more. Let me open up that basement door and let some of the darker stuff out. And let's see if you're still okay. Right? And through repetition and practice, you're teaching your subconscious brain that it's okay to feel these emotions. And the first 20 times you do it, you may get nowhere. You may look at a blank page and go, I don't know, I'm feeling numb. I don't have anything. There's nothing there. And all that to me means is that the repression that's been lifelong for you is really, really strong.
It's a,
that makes sense.
It's so it's interesting. Like my part of my day, well, not my entire daily practice, but the moment in time to which I actually sit down and dedicate to this stuff on a daily basis is 20 minutes. And, okay. it's not a, you know, I've tried the journaling like you had said, and it becomes just a, I'm basically writing an autobiography, which is not the intent. Right. And so that, you know, that didn't work for me. And then I would kind of go back and do the I'm just going to think about it kind of thing and just go on and live my life. But ultimately, it would, you know, every couple of days or once a day or something like that, I would feel some tightening in some certain places. But the thing that really helped me turn the corner was, okay, like, I like the writing idea. I also like the quote unquote, what I call it, like visualization idea, imagining that place between your jaw essentially and your belly, you know, that part of it could be sure. Your neck. And you've talked about this and Adam has talked about this, almost thinking about that. And my journal, I just open up notes on my Mac and I'll go find someplace quiet. If the kids are here and the wife is here, then I'll drive down to, there's a park that's right near our house, like where there's some hikes and things like that. And I'll pull into a spot in the corner and I'll take out my laptop. And it is literally just, I set the 20-minute timer and I've got the timers in the upper right-hand corner of my screen. And it's just sentence after sentence of, I am feeling or I feel, and then whatever it is, either anger. But what I've noticed is sometimes it'll be like, I'll literally just be like that shitty little teenager that says, okay, Eddie, you got to go do this. I don't feel anything today, bro. Like, I don't want to do it. And then I go and I do it anyway. And it might take like 11 minutes, 12 minutes, 13 minutes of repeatedly asking the question and saying something. And then suddenly, and I always have my eyes closed when I do this, suddenly like my chin will start to quiver and I'll start to get tears. It's like it's very strange, but it may take 10 or 11 or 12 minutes and it feels like a fucking eternity when it goes that long.
Oh, sure.
Without getting anywhere. But then all of a sudden it feels like there's a, you know, I have a chisel and a big hammer and I'm just like banging on a big block of ice that suddenly is now starting to break apart. And it's really like pretty remarkable that a 20 minute a day, I mean, I'll dick around on Instagram for 2 hours in a row, right? Not doing anything, but spending 20 minutes on notes on my computer.
Painful.
It's painful and very challenging. Yeah. But so it's just amazing how much lighter I feel. Like literally it's the equivalent to me of feeling like I woke up and I'm 15 pounds lighter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The problem, though, the challenge is that when somebody sits down and they either try to do a journaling process or a zero pain now type of process, I am feeling whatever, and they come up empty, they quickly decide that this doesn't work. I don't know how to do this. And then they don't even try anymore.
Right.
And so you can't stop before you've really given an effort. These things take practice. The other thing I like to really tell people is, you know, after you do this, you can really kind of work yourself up, like you were just explaining. You get pretty darn emotional as you're doing this, and you're allowing these, you know, deep, dark, scary, nasty emotions to come out. Very important for me is to do something soothing afterwards. Go take a walk outside, listen to a great piece of music, whatever. Go take a hot bath or a hot shower, smile, watch a funny movie. Like, bring yourself down, because what you're doing with this process is allowing these repressed emotions out. But then afterwards, in order to convince the subconscious that you're okay, you actually have to be okay. Because some people get so wound up from this work that they freak out and start having anxiety attacks. And they start lashing out at the people around them. And like now all of a sudden they're just this big emotional ball of mess because there's no soothing. So I think it was Schubner who talked about the soothe to rage ratio.
Yep.
And soothing is incredibly important, which is why I'm telling people, do your daily process. But then the rest of the day, stop thinking about it. Stop caring. It's like going to the gym in the morning. You go to the gym whenever you work out. You get in your workout. And while you're there, you're really focused. That's kind of like doing this type of a TMS-based process. But when you're not in the gym, you're probably not measuring and monitoring your biceps and say, did I grow in the past hour? Right?
Maybe when I was 17.
No, but my point is you're not thinking about the gym for the rest of the day. And if you are, it's kind of like I'm looking forward to it type of stuff. But not freaking out like, oh my God, this isn't working. How come I didn't grow my muscles yet? You're not constantly focused on it. You do your work, you work out, you do the TMS work, and then the rest of the day you go about and you live your life and forget about it because you know tomorrow I'm going to do the work again. But if you're constantly measuring and monitoring and looking for the pain, it's going to be there. If you're constantly thinking about the pain all day long, it's going to be there. If you wake up and the first thing you think about is, how bad is it going to be today? It's going to be there. So just commit to doing this daily process. And for the rest of the time, hate to say it, but don't give a shit. Stop caring. Somebody today just commented on one of my videos that she got better when she literally stopped caring if she had pain or not. And so many people are like, how can you stop caring? That doesn't make sense. How do you ignore it? you just literally got to, like, outcome independence. I know that's easier said than done, but you got to literally, the minute you stop saying it's there or it's not there, I'm going to have a good day anyway, that's the minute you start getting better, because you're not firing those neurons that says, give me pain all day long. You're basically going, bring it on. I don't care.
Well,
it's like getting rid of a panic attack.
I feel like that's much easier to do for people if there is some kind of a daily thing to it. You know what I mean? Like, if you can actually have the rigidity to sit and the discipline to sit there for 20 minutes and do a I am feeling session on your computer at a park for 20, you know, for 20 minutes or whatever, you have suddenly the space to have 23 and a half hours have no dedication to pain. Whereas if some people think, okay, I'm gonna, like, there was that really cool video that you did with the whiteboard where it had like the square and it was something about Tony Robbins, but you were talking about,
sure,
essentially the, yeah, need for the necessity for repetition.
You actually got to do something, yeah,
right, you actually have to do something, you have to do it regularly. And that's what I think it's so interesting, and the one of the things that Zero Pain Now talked about in the book is that it says that when do you stop basically doing this thing daily or doing this process? And it's when the pain stops plus 2 weeks basically. And to continue to almost build yourself a buffer for that. So, you know, what I want to know is, like, so you're starting to do this pain for you.com. People can go and find you there. And of course, I'm going to link anything that we talk about will be in the show notes, but talk about, you know, some of the work that you're doing and, how your approach is different, if it is, and what can people expect from you in the future?
Well, about a month ago, I just got on a kick where I said, you know what, I'm going to just start talking to my iPhone and just sharing some ideas and thoughts, right? And I've got a never-ending list of topics. I literally have a to-do list on my phone with like at least 50 more topics, you know, and a video a day is almost 2 months more. And sometimes I'm doing two videos in a day. So that's a commitment I'm making to anybody who wants to follow me, but also to myself. And what I'm finding is by doing this every day and by thinking about how can I express these thoughts daily in the most clear to understand way, I'm refining my message. Basically, I'm getting better at doing this. One of the analogies I came up with was completely on the cuff live about treating visitors or treating emotions like visitors. I don't know if you remember that. And if I got a minute, I can share it.
Yeah, please do.
But literally, like, you know, we've been taught that emotions are bad, scary, dark, unacceptable. And if we have a self-image that says I'm a good person and I'll never be like my dad, we take all these negative emotions that don't fit with that self-image or that we believe are unacceptable, and we lock them out. So imagine you're sitting in a house and knock, knock, knock. There's somebody knocking on your front door. Who is it? It's anger. Oh, no, I don't want to talk to anger. So what do? We lock it out. We don't let them in. All right. That's my explanation of like repression. Nope, nope, not going to let that in. Anger's not allowed. Next thing you know, knock, knock, knock. Who's there? Sadness. Oh, no, I don't want to be weak. I don't want to be a big baby. You know, I don't want to be a, you know, a sad person. You know, I'm a strong person, right? So we lock out all of these emotions. And before you know it, you got the zombie horde out in your front door banging on the door. All these emotions that all they really want to be is felt and acknowledged. That they're trying to get in. They're trying to get in. And, you know, and of course, what's happening inside? You're getting more and more and more and more freaked out. And the more those doors seem like they're going to bust out, the brain says, oh, time for a distraction. Because this is getting too close to reality. Here's some pain. And now all of a sudden you're thinking about your body and you're not thinking about all these emotions anymore. So what I suggest is knock, knock, knock. Who's there? Anger. I don't like anger, but okay, come on in. Let's sit down. Grab a seat. Can I get you something to drink? And then you literally have a conversation with anger and go, yeah, I get it. You're really pissed off. This happened, that happened. I can see it. Yeah, I can feel the tension. Yeah, you're really, really pissed off. And sometimes anger will stay for 2 minutes. Sometimes it'll stay for hours or days, depending upon the severity of what got you angry. But here's where the other people make mistakes, or some people make mistakes, is they say, all right, anger, I got you now. And they lock the doors and keep it. And they hang on to it. It's called holding a grudge. I'm pissed off. And if I let go of this and I let the anger go, it's as if I'm saying that person didn't do me anything wrong. So I'm going to hold that grudge forever. So now you've not only let the anger in, but now you're locking it in. And before you know it, your house is full of anger and rage and sadness and everything else, right? So what I say is keep the front door open, keep the back door open. The anger is going to come in once it's had that conversation, has been felt and acknowledged and heard and honored. It'll be like, hey, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. I needed to be heard. I feel better now. So, hey, I'm going to let myself out. Take care. And then without doing anything proactive, these emotions will release. And you know that because something you're pissed off about 3 weeks ago, you're not nearly as angry about now if you allow yourself to feel it and allow it to leave. But if you hold on to it, you're stuck. And if you lock it outside, it's going to keep on banging on the door until you give it, you know, the honor of being heard. So treat your emotions like a visitor. They'll stay, some of them for a short time, some of them for a longer time, but they all will leave, meaning you'll be able to release those emotions when you've given that emotion, you know, a little bit of attention and acknowledgement. That's all it wants. And that's a real good way to teach your subconscious that, hey, emotions are cool. They're unpleasant, but you know what? It's better than having a zombie horde of emotions out at your front door or locking them all in, and now all of a sudden they're just creating havoc inside. So that analogy literally came up in the middle of a video. I just said, treat them like visitors, and all of a sudden, bam, you know, that whole story came out in the middle of a live video. It wasn't pre-planned. And I finished the video and I said, ooh, that was good. And I said, I got to keep doing these videos because there's some stuff that's going to, you know, definitely refine my message. So I love doing the videos. I literally took today's video and had it transcribed by 10 o'clock and I just got done editing it. I'm going to make that available on the Pain For You website, just 10 mistakes to avoid. It'll be a nice little, you know, checklist reminder. I have a book outlined where I'm going to take a lot of my thoughts and concepts and write that up. And I'm trying to formalize or formulate what I'm going to do beyond that. Not currently doing a lot of one-on-one coaching, but I really want to see if I can help a lot of people, perhaps in a group format, and whether it be a course, whether it be some type of support. I'm trying to figure out what that looks like. But if anybody wants to, you know, stay in tune, go to painforyou.com, get on my list, and I'll notify you guys when I have further developments in those areas.
I'll tell you what, if you ever have an idea to do merch, I just had a vision of it's like a black shirt, 50-50 always. And on the front, it's got the Pain For You logo. And on the back, it says treat them like visitors instead of this like gothy dark font to it. I think it would be perfect. treat them like visitors. Let them walk in. Have you ever seen the movie Inside Out, the kids movie, Pixar?
I have not. Oh, is that the one where the emotions are just walking around?
Yep. Yeah. All about emotions.
I think I have. Maybe not the whole thing. I know what it's about, though. But yeah, it's definitely cool.
My daughter's school is—they're very big on emotions and being able to like label them. And so the thing that every day when I pick her up from school, I always ask, "How are you feeling today?" And regardless of really what the answer is, you know, we can talk about it. But the thing that I like to think about and what you just described in terms of letting anger in, sit down, can I get you something to drink, let's just talk about it, that kind of thing, and then they leave. To me, it's like that's why the best friends to me are not necessarily the ones that are given the advice. It's where somebody can come pour their heart out to you and you can just do a lot of uh-huhs, I hear you, clarify, like those kind of things, but not here's what you should go do. And it's
nobody wants advice that they didn't ask for.
Right. Exactly. but I just feel like especially as somebody's friend, that's the natural inclination, right? To offer up a suggestion because you feel like you can fix the problem. But so often like fixing which I think is a good, I feel like this is connected very tightly to feeling emotion versus a story and trying to feel emotion. And that's maybe where the differentiation in journaling versus just feeling, you know, that's why for me the storytelling didn't work. And then when I sit down and I just write 200 I feels over the course of 20 minutes or however many it may be, seems to be far more productive. And it's interesting you brought up your mother earlier. You know, I love my mom, but she has some definite like TMS tendencies. And at Mother's Day last year, remember I gave her the mind body prescription, I gave her healing back pain. The immediate response was, even though she knows how fundamentally different my life is when I wasn't having to take painkillers and I wasn't not doing anything. And, but she said, you know, my pain is real. And I remember there was a few weeks back, my youngest daughter got an ear infection. We take her to the doctor. She gets on amoxicillin. She had a reaction to it, which I never knew was a thing. Her skin started to look all leopard print and like it lasts a couple days.
Yeah. That's freaky.
But like, I didn't know that there was such a thing as an amoxicillin reaction. I go to the doctor. The doctor clears her, says that it's nothing contagious. It should go away in a couple of days, which it did. But my mom was supposed to come over and see her. And my mom was just having this like total panic attack saying like, I can't catch measles. You know, dangerous that's going to be. What if I come in contact with her and I get measles? And I had said like, it's not measles. Like the doctor already said that this is a reaction to amoxicillin. And I said the phrase, you're giving yourself health anxiety, and man, did that not go over well. That was like the worst thing I could have possibly said. But I'm thinking like, this is what I mean, I've listened to for 33 years is the catastrophizing stuff. And I know that I picked up that tendency along the way. And that's part of the, you know, when I'm about to be cleared for all activity after shoulder surgery and suddenly I get a twinge in my back and I freak out. You know, if I didn't observe this really anxious fear attitude around everything health for so long, maybe I wouldn't have had those tendencies. But you know, you live in your own. I love you, Mom, if you ever listen to this.
Yeah. So I really like Dr. Joe Dispenza. Have you heard his story?
A little bit, yeah. I first saw him in that Heal, that what's it called? The Heal documentary.
Right. So this guy's fascinating me now, and I just got his book, You Are the Placebo. And he literally used his mind to rebuild his spine, literally. Mm-hmm. I mean, he got run over by a truck in the middle of a triathlon in the bike side of the event, riding his bike. And four of the best, you know, spinal surgeons in California said, yeah, you need a rod from your neck down to your base of your spine. That's the only way you're ever going to have a life without, you know, chronic pain, and the only chance you'll ever have to walk. And he says, well, I'm not going anywhere anyway. And he believed in the intelligence of the human body. And he literally decided, I'm going to see what I can do. So, you know, laying face down, which was the only position he could be in, he literally spent hours and hours and hours a day meditating and visualizing every cell coming together and regenerating and rebuilding and basically trusting in the intelligence of the human body, which keeps our heart pumping and our bodies digesting and our lungs breathing and everything else that we don't have to think about. There's an intelligence there that if we can connect with it, he literally, 9 weeks after his accident, walked out of his house. 10 weeks later, he was back at his chiropractic office, literally. And this is a guy who was told, you may never walk again. And through this intention and just instructing his body to put itself back together, he did. And he does all sorts of crazy cool stuff. So if anybody's interested, he talks about the power of the mind and the consciousness and the thought and the intention and belief. And he's done some really crazy stuff and actually runs workshops where he teaches people this meditation and breathing process. And people are having like spontaneous remissions of crazy stuff, Parkinson's disease, tremors going away, like wild stuff in the middle of workshops. So I'm totally geeking out on his stuff. I just think that whole neuroplasticity angle is extremely important when it comes to TMS and chronic pain. Because what we think about all day, we get more of, and it grows and it magnifies. And if all you're thinking about is pain, no wonder it's not going away.
Right. Well, we are at, we're at just over an hour. Is there anything that you want to add? I mean, we plugged the website where people can find, is there anything else, any other nuggets or knowledge bombs that you want to drop before we get out of here?
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot. You know, it could be the type of thing where at some point down the line when I get some more stuff going and have some other ideas fleshed out, I'd love to get back on with you, maybe have a part two. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I really want to say thank you for inviting me on. This was very exciting for me. You know, makes me feel official, right? You know,
it makes me feel official, you know.
I'm on a podcast, yay. And I know, you know, I've seen the roster of people you've had on your show, and you know, you've really done exceptionally well in getting the best of the best minds when it comes to this whole TMS and mind body syndrome and, you know, distraction pain on your show, sharing all of their ideas. So, no, I'm honored to be invited on, and, you know, I appreciate it, and I will do my best to, when the podcast is ready to drop, I'll spread it among my tribe and, make sure as many people as possible go check you out and hopefully get you some new listeners, and we'll see how that goes.
Awesome.
But I appreciate it, brother.
Yeah, Dan, thank you so much for your time, man.
All right. Well, if you need anything else, you know where to find me.
All right, will do.
Thank you, Eddie. Take care.
Thanks, Dan.